Good morning, everybody. Welcome to our first half 2022 earnings conference call. This is Javier Marín, Chief IR and ESG Officer. As always in the call, we'll have our CEO, Meinrad Spenger, which will lead the presentation. This time, we have also the pleasure of having on board our new CFO, David Pérez, and also Guillermo Bárcenas, our Capital Market Director, which will assist Meinrad on the Q&A. Meinrad, all yours.
Thank you, Javier. Good morning, everybody. It is a pleasure to be with you. Once again, we have positive results, and basically, we did two things. One, we complied with our announcement and our promises regarding a transaction that we explained to you in the past. The first one is the signing of a joint venture agreement with Orange, and the second one is the sale, the NetCo or part of the NetCo, of the fiber footprint in the north of Spain, so the former Euskaltel territory. And on the other hand, we have also complied with our objectives in commercial terms. We continue our growth trajectory. So if we start in the presentation at page one, as mentioned, we are very happy to have been able to sign definitive agreements with Orange to create a joint venture in the Spanish market and also to create the leading operator in terms of number of clients in Spain. We have, for that aim, been able to underwrite 6.6 billion euros of financing. We have received great support of financial institutions in a very, let's say, complex market situation. We are happy that we have been successful in that. Our valuation or multiples related to the joint venture are public, and we believe they are quite attractive. If we look at our growth, we have reached over 1.3 billion euros of service revenue growth, which means on a year-to-year basis, like for like, a 5% growth on a reported basis. 39%, that means basically we included Euskaltel transaction these numbers. If you look at EBITDA, we have also increased significantly the numbers. We have reached 540 million euros. Like for like, it's a 10% growth, so the underlying growth, organic growth is 10%. The EBITDA margin is 37%, and this also increased year-on-year basis. In broadband, we continue our growth rate. We have added 55,000 net adds in this quarter and reached close to 3.2 million broadband lines. As you know, most of them are FTTH lines. Our footprint in fiber is also growing to reach 27.5 million homes. If you look at leverage, no big news, but with the exception of the amortizing of the bridge loan that we did with the proceeds from the sale of the NetCo. And the leverage levels is at 4.3 times in the senior secured and total in 5.3 times last 12 months. If you look, if you go on page two, a bit deep dive on the Orange transaction. So the aim is to create a 50-50 joint venture, so nobody controls, it's co-controlled. The calendar for that is basically after we have signed last week, we will file for the authorizations, different authorizations, especially antitrust. We have to go to Brussels, and this process, as we know, is expected to last for 9 to 12 months, and we assume, therefore, that latest in the second half of next year, this transaction should be closed. The logic of this transaction is quite simple. We can generate high level of synergies. 450 million euros have been confirmed on a run rate basis from year four onwards in the due diligence process, and that will enable us to invest in especially in infrastructure, meaning 5G and fiber. The agreement includes a right to trigger an IPO for both parties, and in this scenario, the right or an option to control for Orange if this IPO happens. As mentioned before, we have been able to close 6.6 billion euros of incremental debt. So we have received very good support of a strong pool of international banks. The MásMóvil debt will remain in place. And basically what's also interesting, that the main part of this debt is a bank debt. So with quite stable, let's say, interest rates and the high predictability for us. We have, between the parties, also agreed on a quite strict financial policy. So we want to deliver towards 3.5 times EBITDA. And that is also necessary because if you want to IPO, we have to have a lower level of debt than the initial debt. We think also the joint venture will benefit of its solid structure, okay, strong shareholder industrial focus. In rating, we expect to be the rating in a double B category. And we are happy that we have been able to sign this transaction before the summer vacations. On the next page, some details on the NetCo. As you remember, this refers to the fiber footprint in the former Euskaltel territory. And what we did is basically we sold a majority stake in this NetCo. MásMóvil will stay as a minority shareholder. And we have been able to obtain net around 500 million euros that we have used already to repay the asset bridge loan, so this 500 million, and therefore obviously leverage has been reduced. We will, as mentioned, maintain the 49% as a financial, pure financial minority stakeholder in the NetCo. And basically, we during the next year, we should be able to terminate all the fiber-related deployment. In Portugal, I mean, we have been very much focused now on the signing of the Orange deal and of the NetCo, but we will also advance with Portugal. We have basically, we will give you more details in the future, in the close future, but basically two options, standalone with the support of financial investors. So it would be a CapEx-light strategy also from a MásMóvil perspective, or to collaborate with any of the operators in the market. If you go ahead on page 4, we see the revenue evolution. Basically, what is important, like for like, the 5% growth in the first half of the year, 39% if we don't consider separately the Euskaltel revenues. On the next page, we see the EBITDA evolution, page 5. So we reach 540 million euros of EBITDA with a 37% margin. If you look just at the reported numbers, so post IFRS, it's a 3% growth, but like for like, it's a 10%. Like for like basically it means we unify the accounting rules between Euskaltel and MásMóvil, and we eliminate the PPA, the non-cash PPA that derives of the transaction of MásMóvil, so they take a private bid. On the next page, we see the evolution of our services, the number of services. So basically, we have added this quarter again 55,000 broadband lines and 134,000 postpaid lines, 55. It's a bit lower than in the quarter before. Basically, we have reorganized also our technician teams, our installers, after the Euskaltel acquisitions, and we had to, until everybody was again on speed, we lost probably 1.5 months. But in overall, we can be very happy with these results. In a complex environment, in complex market situation, we've been able to maintain our growth momentum. Also, prepaid has been stabilized. It's also important. It seems also that we will see some growth momentum there. Tourists have been coming back to Spain. We have been improving our commercial performance. So we are at record growth rates right now in prepaid as well. So fantastic news. On the next page, you see the reported net capex. The evolution is basically in line with what we could expect from Q1. Basically, it has doubled. And what is important, I think, to note here is that we are at moderate levels of recurrent capex, so it's below 12%, and well, no big surprises there. If you look at the cash flow from operations, pretty much the same picture as in Q1, but that we have, so we have in Q2 generated positive, a small positive cash flow, and we are optimistic that this positive trend will also continue over the in the second half of the year. In the net debt, no big news there, but that we have been able to execute the NetCo and amortize the bridge loan. And on the other hand, we see that the 117 million are the cash flow from operations, and the cash one-offs are including mainly penalties with Orange. You know, we had to reorganize all our wholesale relationships after the acquisition of Euskaltel. And on the other hand, already integration costs, where, by the way, we are advancing very well. We have migrated all the B2C mobile clients from the Euskaltel group in the three territories, meaning Basque Country, Asturias, and Galicia. And also in the remaining aspects, we are happy with this process. And at the end, you see the nominal debt, and on the last page, the nominal debt, basically the details with the leverage, the 5.3 of total debt and the 4.3 of senior structural debt. So basically, messages: we comply with our plan. We have repaid the bridge loan, and we are in a good way to generate significant cash. Also because in the Spanish market right now, and especially in MasMobile, we have been able to reduce the churn, which is the substitution of clients is quite cash intensive. So that's all from my side at this point. Thank you very much, and we are open to answer your questions.
Thank you. For our Q&A, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by 1 on your telephone keypad now. If you change your mind, please press star followed by 2. And when preparing to ask a question, please ensure your phone is unmuted locally. Our first question comes from Joshua Mills from Exane BNP Paribas. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Hope you're well, and thanks for the questions. I've got two, please. The first is just a follow-up on the point you made about EBITDA growth. Forgive me if I'm being dense here, but could you just explain a bit more the moving parts behind the minus 2% EBITDA growth that you report, and then the positive, I think, 10 or 12%, which you'd be looking at on a like-for-like basis in the second quarter. I think it roughly translates to a 35, 40 million cost headwind in the quarter, and I'd just love to understand how that's broken down, why it's the case, and whether we should look out for it in future quarters. And then secondly, just on the kind of competitive environment and commercial momentum, you usually give some helpful commentary on this and what you see elsewhere. It does look like your postpaid sub-momentum slowed a bit, and your broadband is still a bit lower than it was this time last year. So any thoughts, I would be appreciated. Thanks very much.
Okay, Joshua. First, we have to differentiate between two elements. What is the organic growth or the underlying growth, and what is, let's say, reported accounting growth? No. So if you refer to the second one, basically you refer to non-cash items, and the main part is explained by IFRS 3 and 15 elements. So it's an accounting effect. And on the other hand, we have had a strong push in the new businesses, in the new business lines, the home security, etc., that has also some negative effects this quarter. But if you look, and that's, I think, the important and the big message to you, if you look what is really the business doing, the organic underlying growth, we are continuing to grow in all quarters, also in Q2. And the accounting effects are non-cash effects, basically. So, and if you want to understand the details, basically, a bit more, it's that the amortized SAC or custom acquisition cost is higher than the new deferred SAC or acquisition cost that we have right now, for multiple reasons. Because the main reason is basically that the market in Spain has cooled down or cooled off, so there's less churn in the market, and therefore there's less gross adds for all the players, also for us. So amortized tax from the past, clients that we have acquired in the past, is higher than the deferred new SAC of the new clients that we acquire right now. So that's the first question. The second one is a bit related. In a cooler market, less clients are moving, and therefore, compared with 1 year ago, every operator is acquiring gross less than before. We have still a fantastic evolution, so with this 134 in post 1,000 lines in postpaid and in 555 1,000 lines in broadband is a fantastic result. And as mentioned, in this quarter, we have been suffering a bit because we had to reorganize all the technicians or installers in the territory, especially in the north. And there in the beginning, we had some, let's say, troubles to get to full speed again. So we have still some backlog there. And it's not only related to broadband, where you need technicians that come to your house, but obviously the associated mobile lines as well, because people usually change the full package, mobile and fixed. Did I respond to your question? Right.
It does, yeah. I mean, I guess the follow-up would just be if you could give us an idea of how, just from a reporting basis, that headwinds on SAC will look for the rest of the year. I know that effectively with the deal between you and Orange, and the guidance is kind of out there for, I think, about 1.25 billion of EBITDA after lease for the end of the year. So is that number based on a kind of cash EBITDA figure excluding these amortization impacts, or is that based on an expectation that this headwind will continue throughout the next 6 months?
No, look, we are in a very good way to comply with our EBITDA and cash expectations. So we don't foresee any surprises. We are very, let's say, optimistic in this regard. I think the challenge for all the players right now in the Spanish market is basically the top line to continue strong revenue growth, and we continue growing 5%. So in this sense, we are happy. We have also to understand that basically in this sector, it is the only major sector in the Spanish market with a downward trend in pricing. So we have 10% inflation currently in Spain, and you know the ARPUs, if you wish, in the market or the general revenues are going down. And probably we have to expect that also the telco sector at one point in time has to adjust for inflationary effects. And obviously that will help us to maintain in general top line growth. But bottom line in cash, we are in a very good way. We are optimistic to comply with our full expectations.
Understood. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Mathieu Robillard from Barclays. Your line is open.
Yes, good morning, and thank you for the call. I have three questions, please. The first, if you could give us a little bit more color or granularity in terms of where you're gaining market share on broadband and on mobile. Obviously, there's a lot of aggression at the low end of the market, but you are doing well, and I wanted to understand what kind of clients you're taking. Is it in the mid-end or the midpoint of the market? Is it more to the lower end? And generally how you see things going forward. The second question was about infra. So you closed the deal with Euskaltel. If you could remind us what today you have in terms of infrastructure, what is yours? I mean, how many FTTH homes do you have versus the ones that you can wholesale to? And lastly, on Portugal, I understand you're not giving an update now, but I was wondering if you could discuss whether the negotiations with the existing MNOs on a roaming deal have progressed since Q1 call. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Matthew. First question, where do we capture our clients in which segments? It depends a bit on the definition of the segments, no? I would, let's say, define four segments, if you wish. The low end, I think we all agree what it is. It's basically FMC at 30 euros or below 30 euros, or if you wish, below 35 euros, okay, a month. That's, for me, the low end. Then we have a mid-end, 40 to 50, 55, and then we have a high-end above that. And then we have a super high-end, which includes a lot of premium content, especially soccer rights in the Spanish market. Right? Soccer is basically the premium content. No? So right now in this soccer right segment, we are not playing. Because we have not acquired, we are not an audiovisual operator, and we have not acquired soccer rights in the Spanish market. But here, let's say, good news is that we have half of the league was bought by DAZN, so an OTT, and that means that our clients from now onwards will also have access, if they wish, at least to 50% of the football games. So we might be able also to position us in this super premium segment in the future. In the we are not present in the low end, and we did this consciously because we are always thinking long term, and we believe this super low cost is not sustainable. The margins are very very small, and we want to be able to invest both in fiber as well as in 5G. So we are not present. And then between the two segments, the let's say the mid and the high end without the super content soccer rights, it depends on the brand. So in MásMóvil, the MásMóvil brand, we are probably capturing most of the clients in the mid segment, and with the Yoivo brand, we are capturing in the high end, and the high end includes unlimited calls, unlimited mobile data, additional lines, already a relevant content offering based on distribution of the content of others. And in MásMóvil, we are, let's say, plain vanilla. We give the clients basically a premium service, but focused on connectivity and mobile. Matthew?
Sorry, if I may interrupt. In your, for instance, the kind of clients you're getting there, are you seeing people downspin from other high-end tariffs or super high-end, or is it actually a segment of the market that is growing with customers ready to take more for more offers?
Look, I mean, the Spanish market is growing around 400,000 lines in broadband a year, simplifying, no? And it's true that MásMóvil probably captures a relevant share of these new clients, but in addition, obviously we are growing, let's say, from the traditional operators principally, and their gross ARPU is usually a bit higher than our gross ARPU. Gross meaning without promotions, without considering promotions, etc. So there is obviously a downspin from other operators as well, but we are basically not a MásMóvil is not a price aggressive player. We are not suffering heavily in ARPU right now. Basically, we are very stable. Depends a bit on the brand, but for instance, in Yoigo, we have been able to slightly increase the ARPU. Also in the north with the Euskaltel brands, we have stabilized and start to increase ARPU again. So we are not price aggressive. So we are not attacking other operators' client base. The very high end is super low cost offering. It's not our style. So it's a mixture between both, but it's not especially the first one, meaning the downspin from premium ARPUs. Okay, then the infrastructure. Yes, we have sold basically the new fiber network in the Euskaltel territory. It's important to say we have not sold any traditional infrastructure of Euskaltel. So we maintain, let's say, the backbone, backhaul, and obviously also the HFC network. It refers more or less to half of the territory. So 2.4 million homes was the full footprint of Euskaltel, and we're talking about a bit less than 1.2 million homes. And that means there is part still to deploy. So this is still work in progress for us. But overall, on a very high level, we have around 19 million homes that we would consider our own, or where we have ownership economics, because basically we have IRUs. We did a lot of co-deployment with other operators, especially with Orange in the past. And then the remaining footprint is mainly is based on commercial agreements with other operators, and there especially with Telefonica. If you look in Portugal, yes, we are advancing with the operators. We are in close talks with various of them. We are also progressing in updating our HFC network. So we will do a mixture in the HFC network of FTTH plus, let's say, advanced cable technology. And we are also in deployment of a fiber footprint in Porto and in Lisbon area. I would say probably in September, we conclude whether or not we are partnering up with a financial investor on a standalone basis, or if we are open to collaborate with alternative operators other operators in the Portuguese market. But it's early to comment details yet on this on Portugal, but we'll come back quite soon to you.
Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Luigi Minerva from HSBC. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, guys. Thanks for the call and for taking my questions. I have three. The first is on the commercial environment in Spain. I just wanted to ask you, mainly, what are your expectations for the back-to-school campaign? You think the current phase in the market, where the market is more cooled, as you said, will be maintained, or whether you expect more intensification of promotions with the back to school campaign, and perhaps linked to that, if inflation and pressure on cost of living is having any impact on the way people choose their services in telco, if you have any evidence of that. Secondly, on just as a read across from your NetCo transaction, I'm curious to hear your views about whether really the cable network infrastructure has any future in Spain, given that it's obviously such a high FTTH market. And on Portugal, I appreciate the updates will come soon, but I just wanted particularly to investigate whether the auction terms would allow you to sell your spectrum, for example, to Digi, and whether that's an option that you would consider. Thank you.
Thank you, Luigi. Commercial environment. Well, it's true that the market is cooler, meaning people are moving less. And that's due to a lot of reasons. I would explain it not so much by lack of promotional activity or commercial offers, but consumer behavior. We see that people who have to work from home are less keen to change and to risk to have one day or 2 days without service, etc. No, so we have between 15% and 20% less changes in the Spanish market than 1 year ago. So it's relevant. I expect a moderate back to school campaign. So from end of August onwards. I think the operators understand that the inflationary effects on their cost base, energy, etc., might be relevant, and therefore, to be super aggressive would leave us without margins, and that's obviously not sustainable. So I think this reflection is ongoing. We continue to be rational. We will, continue to use only limited level of promotional activity, and I think the market will behave similar. I think, but I have no information regarding this, obviously from the competition. But that's my feeling because all are concerned a bit with the environment, and what I mentioned before, I believe. Sooner or later, also the telco sector has to adapt and to consider also in its pricing the inflationary effects. We cannot be the only sector reducing continuously pricing. Now we have seen the results of the market of other operators in the Spanish market. Basically, all of them have a reduction in their service revenues. We have lost in the Spanish market 35%. Of telco revenues in the last 10 years, obviously this is not sustainable. So we will have to react sooner or later as well. In terms of cable network, the future. I mean, that's let's say the choice of each individual operator. No, in our case, our bet is clear. We want to be 100% fiber because we believe it has better performance. And we always put the client experience as our first priority. And therefore, for us, it's quite clear. It's not an easy process because, the retrofit or the update from cable to fiber, it's a relevant work. You're not saving too much versus deploying a new fiber network on the one hand. And then also the client migrations are a lot of work. And they are costly because you have to change all the client equipment like the CPE, the TV box, etc. So in MásMóvil, when we look at Euskaltel, we have right now around 70% of our sales in this territory are fiber. So basically, we changed within a year completely the dynamics, and we provide access to superior technology already for the new joiners, and we have migrated proactively around 60,000 or a bit more than 60,000 clients already from cable to fiber. So we are in a good way also in this sense in terms of integration. And in terms of in Portugal, we have been able to acquire quite a relevant stake of Spectrum that enables us to do a standalone operation, and we don't plan to sell off the spectrum because we want to create a sustainable player in the market, and this would be basically renouncing on an ambitious growth project, and that's not in our mind basically. And I think in terms of auction terms, if I'm not wrong, I think you are not allowed to sell the spectrum within the first 2 years after the acquisition. But since this is not our intention, I'm not in the details regarding that.
Okay, that's great, mainly. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Joe Howes from Federated Hermes. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, guys, and thanks for taking the question. A couple, if I may. Just thinking in terms of regulatory approval on the joint venture, I was wondering if you'd thought of potential remedies and assessed any areas of the business that could be disposed of if required. And then the second one is kind of in line with that. How should we be thinking about Masnovo once the Spanish entities have been deconsolidated? Are you able to give us an idea of what revenue and EBITDA is currently at Portugal and potentially how you plan to fund operations there going forward? That'd be great. Thanks.
Yes, thank you, Joe. Well, in terms of the regulatory question, first point, so we expect say early after the Spanish summer to do the pre-filing in the European Commission, so DG competition. And we have already asked for the assignment of a case team, so this is basically on progress. We are of the opinion that this team, even though that MasMobile and Orange together have a relevant market share, will not change fundamentally the structure of the market, because this is a multiplayer market. So our transaction is not a transaction, a typical transaction from 4 to 3. It's a transaction, depends on the definition, from 7 to 6 or from 9 to 8 players. If we do deep dive in more, we see that right now the segment of operators that is growing most and that are the most price aggressive operators are the ones that have no infrastructure. And that means that the wholesale market in Spain is functioning well. And that's why we think not even on price-based competition this deal would have impact, or negative impact, if you wish. In addition, there are a lot of other competition elements where we think that the joint venture would have positive impact on the competition, in the sense of B2B competition, so in the enterprise segment, we would be much stronger together. In the wholesale segment, where MasMobile basically is not present, and in the case of Orange, it was very much focused on MasMobile, and also on infrastructure-based competition. There's no doubt, and that will be reflected in our business plan, that the joint venture, so Orange and MasMobile together, will be able to invest more in infrastructure. And why is that? Because we have we are able to generate a high level of synergies, as mentioned before, around 450 million euros. So all these elements will rather enhance competition than reduce it. And therefore, we will defend this position also in Brussels, and obviously it's in the hand of DG competition to evaluate this and to confirm our position or not. But we are quite convinced that there is a lot of reasoning why the Spanish market is very singular. If most players price high level of competition, and therefore we will argue that this will not change fundamentally the structure of the market. Your second question was regarding Portugal. No, Portugal is a small operation. Yes, but in the numbers that we have included here in this transaction, so let's say in the EBITDA, this 1.2 plus million euros of EBITDA, that is base of part of the perimeter, Portugal is excluded. So Portugal is already basically not considered in this deal, and the operation is an operation of around 10 million euro EBITDA operation. So in this in this, let's say, in the group, it's not yet significant. It's a growing operation, but it's still relatively small.
Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Jean-Yves Guibert from Blue Bay Asset Management. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Good morning to all of you. Thank you very much. I've got three questions. First one, Mainwright, you indicated targeting a BB rating for the additional TLB. Is it your expectation of such rating at inception, i.e. upon closing of transaction with Orange, or is that the forward-looking target, i.e. Would such a rating be immediately the rating across the capital structure upon closing of the transaction? Second question, while your commercial momentum remains strong, there is a sharp deceleration in your like-for-like top-line growth. It was close to 10% in 21, 6.7% in Q1, and now 3.3% in Q2. Volumes are, continue to increase. Does it imply that ARPU is declining? So could you please comment on this decelerating growth dynamics and explain the factors behind this? And last question on your structuring EBITDA. Your pro forma reported EBITDA on the LTM basis decreased sequentially by only 5 million, but your structuring EBITDA declined by 70 million. So could you please explain the reason of the 65 million decline in adjustments, which usually covers synergies and the netco lease impact for 13 million. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So only a detail, to which 65 million are you referring to and which period of time are you referring to?
Yeah, so sequential and LTM. So you're reporting a structuring EBITDA LTM basis for which you're using to calculate the leverage of 1276 as of June 22, and it was 1346 at March 22. So a 70 million decline, 7-0, on the sequential basis. Why the reported LTM has declined by 5 million only? So there is a delta of 65 million in the different adjustments you are operating to get to the structuring EBITDA, which in theory should be synergies and the net co-lease impact.
Okay, I'm not sure if we can respond in detail this question right now, but I will pass later on to my financial team.
Okay.
If you're not able to respond it now, we will come back to you. No? But basically, we, as mentioned, we expect the GV rating to be in a double B category from interception, so closing onwards. Maybe, Guillermo, do you want to comment on this?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Manny.
Hey, Guillermo.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that would be from closing of the joint venture, and that would be across all three agencies. So all three corporate family ratings to be in the double B category across the different grades of that category. But, yeah.
Okay, and obviously pari passu is the existing first lien debt.
Correct. The existing debt package would remain in place. The joint venture would not trigger any change of control and therefore any mandatory prepayment provisions. So it would be an incremental package to the existing one.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Okay, so regarding the top line commercial performance, I mean, we are growing the first half 5% in service revenues, no? So this is relevant in a, let's say, complex environment. And obviously, let's say, the relative growth will diminish with the size of the company because the impact of the, let's say, additional client, if you wish, is lower in a bigger company than a smaller company. Having said that, we are quite, we have been suffering in the north of Spain, so in the former Euskaltel territory that had traditionally quite a premium ARPU. there we had to do some adjustments, but right now the ARPU is stable and we're seeing opportunities to grow it. As mentioned also before, Yoigo, we have also, let's say, been able to grow in the last month slightly, not super much, but we have been able to grow. And MassMobile is more or less stable. So no, the ARPU is a challenge in this market because there is a wide gap between, let's say, mid or high end and the low end in terms of pricing. So we have, let's say, alternative operators that are very price aggressive in the market, and also some second brands of other incumbents. We have been avoiding to enter this segment because we think it's not rational, and we are prioritizing always the long term and not the short term effect. But overall, we are quite stable in ARPU. We have seen similar evolutions in other operators. No, I think yesterday also Orange has announced more or less stable ARPUs, which is a similar. We have a similar experience basically. And I don't know, David, if you can answer this, the changes in the structuring EBITDA right now, or if we should do it rather offline.
Yes. No. Yeah. Well, we can provide some insights about that. First of all, is the reason for the fall of the structure of EBITDA is for the calculation of it, because we just take, for example, four quarters. And the previous calculations, so it is the last two quarters in the calculation. But besides that, there are so that's a calculation effect. And besides that, when adjusting the EBITDA, we have some combined effects that affects, of course, the PPA amortization, as you were mentioning, mainly. And besides that, some other adjustments from IFRS 15. So the combined effects of all of it is what rises that amount of 70 million euros. That is crucial. So the breakdown of that is that something around 31 million euros can be assigned to the accounting adjustments, and the rest could be then it's due to the effect of the calculations for the average of the quarters.
Now you're using last two quarters annualized, while at March you were still using LTM. Is that correct?
No, Janice, the other way around. So before we were using two quarters annualized.
Last
and
two
remember
quarters
that,
annualized, okay.
Exactly.
Right. And Q4 is seasonally strong, and therefore when you move to the last 12 months, which is smoothing out as it should be, because obviously the two quarters analyzed gives too much weight to a specific quarters that you are putting in the calculation. When you smooth it out, it is because you see this decline. So it's more mathematical impact of moving from two quarters to last 12 months.
But anyway, again, another part of the calculation that you were mentioning are the synergies with Euskaltel. Yes, it is are taken in the calculation as well. Some of them have already been executed, and the rest of them are pending to be executed in the following quarters.
Okay, that's helpful.
So basically, the calculation method explains a bit more or less half of it, and the rest is a non-cash effect of the accounting effect, made basically the PPA amortization.
Okay.
Super. Do we have further questions?
Yes, our next question comes from Jonathan Waite from Ares.
Hi there, good morning. Just two questions from me, please. First is a follow-up to the question on ratings. So have you had any discussions yet with the rating agencies on that rating, or is that just based on your internal interpretation of where you think you'll land at closing? And then the second one is you disclosed that the like-for-like growth for EBITDA, excluding the accounting headwinds, was 10% for the first half of the year. Do you have a figure for Q2 as well that you can give us?
Yes, Guillermo, explain
the rating? Yeah, I guess we are all aware that the rating agencies provide for some rating scenario analysis, and that you would expect that for such a big deal, the principals would have reached to them to do that kind of analysis, but the outcomes are obviously confidential until published. So I don't know if that answers your question.
So it's not a wild case from our side.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, like for like, do we have a figure for, David, do we have a figure for Q2?
Sorry?
Yes, no, the like for like organic growth of 10% for the H1, what is the exact number for Q2 of the organic growth? It's similar, no?
Yeah, it's very similar. So the point is that the organic growth is around, let me check it, this,
5%,
exactly. And it is like for like, so the effects is that mainly those we are mentioning, those, that the difference is the adjustment on the EBITDA for the accounting effects that we are always mentioning. There's accounts for the first half of the year, something comparing with first half of the year, last year is around 30 million euros, 31 million euros, something like that. But at the end of the day, like for like, is that 5% growth for the first half of the year. Yeah, exactly, in the quarter.
For the Q. So 10%.
Exactly, for the quarter.
And 5% for the quarter.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, perfect, thanks guys.
Our next question comes from Fernando Corvero from Bank of Santander. Your line is open, please go ahead.
Hello. Good morning, and thanks for taking my two questions. The first one is a follow-up on the segmentation that you have described before, many. And in that sense, I would like to understand which is, or given your efforts on, let's say, broadening your service offering, particularly with value-added services like power supply, alarms, etc., I would like to understand which is the penetration of those services in the different segments that you have described. And just understand your success on that, no? And the second point is, or the second question is related with your current wholesale cost structure, no? And just to understand considering the footprint that you have, 19 million on ownership economics and the rest on pure wholesale deals, I would like to understand not just to have the breakdown in terms of coverage, also to have the breakdown in terms of customers. What is the number of customers that you are having right now on under wholesale deals in your fixed broadband business? Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Fernando. Look, in terms of value-added services, I mean, we have more than 800,000 clients in the group using content, so TV, television content, and there we have a bit less than 500,000 in the north, Euskaltel, former Euskaltel client, and above 300,000 clients in what was the smaller Mass Mobile group before. And then in this 300 plus, we have a special, let's say, a heavyweight, I would say two-thirds in our Yoigo brand, which is basically, if you wish, the high end from in our group, so our premium brand. In terms of other services, we have also, let's say, pushed harder to include additional value-added services in our Yoigo brand. So we started the energy there. We have the health solutions, health insurance, and digital health applications. We've also launched in this brand first, and now we have also added energy plus alarms in the Mass Mobile brand. But there is also, let's say, probably 80% weight in our Yoigo brand. I mean, the logic is quite clear. In our premium brand, we're offering the most premium services. And therefore, this helps also to maintain and increase ARPU, the logic. It increases loyalty in this sense because people that are happy with our telco services, they are also, let's say, more open to contract other additional services,
and having somebody engage with you in different ways, meaning loyalty will increase. So it's very beneficial for us. If we look at our wholesale cost structure, the exact split between, let's say, ownership economics in terms of customer versus third-party agreements, I don't have it exactly in my mind. I know that it will be quite proportionate, I would say, maybe a bit less weight still in the client base in third-party networks because they are newer. No? Some third-party, let's say, networks we have been opening up just recently. So my guess would be that we have higher proportion in the 19 million network with ownership economics than in the third-party one. And my hypothesis would also be right now that probably in the crossheads, the current crossheads, it's the other way around, that we are growing a bit stronger in the third-party networks because they are newer networks and they are in areas, that are with lower level of competition.
Okay, makes sense. Can you just have a follow-up?
Fernando, maybe, yeah. Off the line, our ESG team, investor relations team, Javier, can provide you with the more exact numbers.
Okay, brilliant. Just as a follow-up on the value-added services discussion, particularly on TV, given the, let's say, the Euskaltel legacy exposure to TV, I just would like to understand if you have already migrated those customers to, let's say, to a similar model that the one that you are having in Yoigo through Agile, consequently not being a pay TV operator, in order to understand at which extent the Euskaltel customer base will be forced or not to be included into the wholesale obligations once merged with Orange. When I say wholesale obligations, in terms of the calculation of the Spanish football costs.
Okay, Fernando, I think that you have to differentiate a few things here. One is if we are an audiovisual operator in the group or in the, let's say, Euskal territory, no. We have all unified our model, and basically we are distributing third-party content, but we are not producing and not purchasing nor selecting the content of our own. We have a partner that is Agile TV for us. So this is unified, the model. The other thing is in terms of football, if we are not buying football rights, simplifying right now, okay? If we would buy it for the next seasons, season, we will see what the regulation is, because the regulation runs out, I think, mid next year, during 2023, in some moment of time. And then we don't know what will happen because the situation has changed. The situation has changed since Dazon bought half of the league. No? And so probably we can expect that the regulation will be different. Right now, the TV cost, depend basically on two main parameters. One is the number of broadband lines or broadband clients, and the other one is the number of TV clients. In TV, right. We would rank with zero, you're right, but in broadband, which is the major KPI, the most relevant, I think 80% or 75% of the cost, there nothing has changed, no, basically.
Okay, makes sense. Many thanks for the call, Mini.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Florian Henritzi from Bank of America. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, everyone. I hope you can hear me well. I just wanted to come back on the EBITDA question. Sorry. Can you maybe also give us some color how many synergies you have realized in the quarter and where we are in terms of run rate? And then I think you mentioned you have some strong activity of those new services. Is it possible to quantify how much revenue and EBITDA and are coming from these new services and how much that is growing on a year-on-year basis? That's the first one.
Okay, Florent, we hear you perfectly. I think you have for sure a mass mobile connection because it works very well. So in terms of EBITDA, I mean, if you refer to Euskaltel synergies, I think you refer to Euskaltel synergies, no?
Yes, yeah, you're right.
Yes, yeah. If you reach, we have materialized around 100 million run rate, so on a quarterly basis, it's 25 million. I don't know, David, if you want to add something to this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it could be, yes, around 25 million in this quarter, but for the full semester, for the full half year of 2022, is around 60 million euros in total of synergies already executed.
Okay, okay, understood.
Okay. And revenues, if you refer to, let's say, the non-Hotelco core services, I mean, basically, it's EBITDA negative still because it's a growing business, and basically, I think in the negative effect in the last quarter, Q2 was around 5 million. It's normal, no? First year of operations, these services obviously don't contribute yet directly in terms of margin, but indirectly in terms of churn and loyalty. No? Our aspiration is obviously to create also a positive impact mid-term and long-term in the services per se, but the EBITDA impact is still negative. In terms of revenues, I must pass right now. On a very high level, you can expect that this is around a 200 million euro figure, mainly driven per energy. And maybe, Florian, we come back to you with an exact number after this call.
Okay, understood. And the second question, I mean, you have now lined up the financing packages. Is it possible to give us any color around the terms? I mean, what's the cost of that for the different tranches? And then also on the deal, you've given the synergy number of 450 million. Is it possible to get a sense of the integration cost, which you will face up front?
The integration cost for Orange or for potential Orange
yes.
deal or for okay.
Yeah, for Orange, I assume there's some upfront costs as well.
Well, Guillermo, maybe can you comment on the financing?
Yeah, sure. So about the cost of the incremental debt, there are two sides of it. I think there is a big element coming from bank liquidity. So take and hold from banks. That will be at the floating rate, and the spread of it is going to be lower than the ones of the existing term loans. Probably more or less in line with the revolver ones. And then there is going to be an element of underwriting that will be placed in the DCM market at a later stage, and that it's going to be subject to prevailing market conditions at the time of issuance or syndication. Is that does that answer
yeah.
your question? Or?
Yeah, so sorry, the line was breaking a bit on my side. So you said in line with the current terms of the revolver?
More or less, yeah. That would okay. be the margin of the bank piece. And then the other side is going to be syndicated or placed into the DCM market. So we will have optionality around fixed or floating or currencies. So we will be monitoring market conditions to see when we syndicate and into what instrument. So we cannot comment on that.
Okay, understood. And on the integration
okay.
charges.
You know, the degradation charges, I mean, we signed last week and late in night during the weekend.
Yeah.
So, let's say businesses, potential joint business plan is not public yet. So I cannot comment here exact figures, but in terms of logic, we are, I think one of the strengths of this potential transaction is that we are complementary on one hand, and already in terms of network, very much integrated, because we are using, let's say, the same, in big, to a big extent, the same fiber networks, and we are using also the Orange network as our complementary main network to our own mobile network. So we are also integrated there. And usually in such, let's say, big transactions, the main integration costs are network related. And in this sense, we will be lower than, let's say, benchmarks, or we expect to be lower than benchmarks because we are already very much integrated.
Okay. Okay, makes sense. Thanks for the color. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Asia Ali from Barings. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. I just had two clarification ones, please. Firstly, on your LTM versus LTQA EBITDA, is that going to be LTM going forward, or do you use the two interchangeably on a quarterly basis? And then secondly, just checking whether for your existing TLB debt, whether you've put any hedges in place to fix the interest rate, or whether you're running them floating in the current environment. Thank you.
Thank you. We will not be opportunistic and change criteria each quarter, so don't worry. So I think I think it makes sense to have a, let's say, smoother definition. So in principle, there is no changes planned to the current mechanism of calculating it. So last 12 months. In terms of hedging, maybe David, can you comment on that?
Yes, of course. We are tracking very closely what is the market, how is the market interest rates environment. And what is true is that, as you well know, is that there is a very, very high volatility. So at the end of the day, we're just monitoring the marketplace. And yes, we are planning to make some hedging of the debt, but seeking for the optimal conditions for making it, for the execution. So yes, we are fully aware of the that the conditions of the market so invites you to make something, but you know the volatility and the or some overreaction over the interest rates curve obliges to monitor it more very closely and to take care of what is the best opportunity to make it. But yes,
thank you very much. Those are all my questions.
Sorry, and just to add, and we are...
I would like to add that as you also know, part, at least 50% of the existing debt is already at a fixed interest rate. So the fact is that we have only 50% approximately of the existing debt at a floating rate. So our intention is to have more than that, 50% of present fixed interest rates, so something between around 75%, something like that, already hedged. Or hedged in the future.
Our next question comes from Mikhail Wolf from Credit Suisse. Your line is open. Please go ahead.
Hi, apologies. Somewhat of a rudimentary question. Could you just break down your available liquidity balance for me with some of the new facilities you put in place?
A breakdown of the liquidity balance, so meaning our cash position?
Well, yeah, your cash and your other available lines, I guess.
Okay, David?
Well, I think that we have, plenty of available sources of liquidity to cover, in excess our needs. Compressing the available credit lines, short-term credit lines, together with some other confirmed lines, factoring, etc., with something just well above 1 billion euros. So at the end of the day, We have plenty of sources, unfortunately, comprising those banking sources, but also some lines for appealing to the short-term capital markets through the commercial paper program. So we do feel confidence in not having any liquidity tensions in the future, of course, thanks to this availability of liquidity lines. Does it answer your question?
This concludes our Q&A. I will now hand back to the MassMobile management team for final remarks.
Okay, thank you very much, everybody. Mainly, I leave you for the final sentence.
Well, thank you very much for your interest. We are happy to confirm that we comply once again with our plan and with our promises. And we are quite optimistic that this will continue like that because we have good vibes regarding the second half of this year. Thank you very much.
Thank you.